IMRO's 2023 Best Local or Regional News Programme. The Voice of the Northwest, the 9 till noon show with Greg Hughes.
And the Voice of the Northwest is your voice. And thanks to Mary and Kathleen, two incredibly powerful women on the programme there just before 10, outlining their experiences of trying to engage with the defective concrete redress scheme. Greg, had the government no obligation to fix these houses, says a listener? Well, the obligation, as they see it, has been outlined in the scheme, I suppose. Another caller says, I cannot understand why these homeowners haven't all withheld their mortgage payments, collapsed the banks. Why is it okay for bank managers to collapse our banks and send our country into a bailout, but not the public? The only thing this government will listen to is a bank collapse. Well, I mean, there's a couple of things with that, and I get where you're coming from, and there's, you probably know more than I do. I'm sure you do, and many others do. Firstly, I don't think it would collapse the banks, for a starter, because there's probably, even though there's an awful lot of people affected, it's probably, you know, not a percentage that would be required to do that. Secondly, the scheme as it's laid out, a lot of people are going to have to seek finance and are seeking finance. You refuse to pay your mortgage, you can't do that. You can't go to your credit union, you can't go to your banks, you can't get a bridging loan. Your property, you could lose your property as well, of course. You couldn't get a mobile phone. You probably couldn't pay in for your car insurance over 10 months, as some people have to. Do you know? So there are great consequences for purposely destroying or defaulting on a mortgage. So I get where you're coming from, but I don't think it could ever be done on a scale organised enough that it would have the impact. I think people would just be left individually banjaxed financially. Listening to these very strong women, we're certainly not sick of hearing your terrible story. Keep fighting, says a listener. Another, the banks need to work with people. It's impossible to move on to demolishing and getting the house up to subfloor level to get the first stage payment. No builder's going to go without money for average of 3 months, indeed. And that's for those who have access to credit as well. You know, there are some people who are older, and even if the banks were to come to the table, would they agree on a term, and what happens if that person were to pass away, and so on and so forth? These are the realities of the crisis we're facing, because there's so many different people with different scenarios. We haven't even talked about those with, you know, the farming community, who have been greatly affected by this problem as well. They aren't really included in this scheme at all, and many I've spoken to don't want to speak out because they feel that with people worrying about their homes, they don't feel they can speak about their businesses, if that makes sense. Those in social housing as well, though, hopefully they're with the tenders that are going out, that is, the scheme is being employed in a way that will work for them. Those in community, community facilities, where are all they in all of this? Thank you, Greg, for allowing an outlet for those affected. My defective block issue. That's why certain puppet ministers won't come on your show. Well done again to you and your team. And the application process, says a caller, is ridiculous. And I've just provisionally exploring it, and it is a nightmare. A noted DCC that I may have notified Donegal County Council that I may have defective concrete. A number of unqualified tradesmen have stated I probably have. I've told DCC a number of times the home has not been tested, and thankfully cracks are not too bad, but widening and no kids in my house. But I would like to know if I have it or not. Recently, DCC contractors filled in cracks and painted over them. House looks great, but Mike is still there, I would say. Well, look, there's vertical crack meeting a horizontal crack, and the crack over a millimetre. That, if that's what you have, I think that's the basic line. And again, correct me if I'm wrong, that's the basic line really you have to cross. That's the threshold. Now, to get told you have that, it's going to cost hundreds and hundreds of euro, and then you have to start the process of applying for the scheme before you can even get tested. So, but you're in a council house. Why can't the department, through county councils, employ tradesmen on a full-time basis to complete works on a house? A win for everyone. Bulk buying would mean better buying power and cheaper for the department. Tradesmen's guaranteed full-time employment. Well, that seems to be the Sinn Féin policy, and it is the council's policy or the state's policy in terms of council-owned houses, but not for the individual homeowner. They're expected on a case-by-case, individual-by-individual basis to fully manage the scheme from beginning to end. Right, some more comments here. Let me see. I only found out my 16-year-old was vaping because I found it when making his bed. I'm dead against vapes, I know. And I bet you thought yours, and we've all been down that route, or many of us have, but you thought yours wasn't. And then you find it, and there he is. Well, she is. Cola says that there should be education in secondary schools regarding addictive behaviours in all areas, alcohol, vaping, drugs, etc. Once you become addicted, you have to live with it and try and manage it for the rest of your life. There should be an education on societal pressures and psychological effects of addiction. And again, the problem with the vapes is, and again, for anyone listening, it's most likely you've given up smoking. It's always there, I think, that you did smoke once or that you could relapse and have another. You know, nicotine, you don't just do it for a bit and then stop. That's what really worries me about the young people, because if you can't get a vape, you will go and get a cigarette, because your body tells us that you do need nicotine. It's really tough. It's really tough. And we're going to have a whole crop of, you know, thousands, tens of thousands of young people with this real strong addiction. Nicotine is so hard to come away from. And if you have been addicted to it, you really kind of spend a lot of the rest of your life, you know, avoiding slipping back into it. Health insurance in Donegal's a waste of money. You're paying for urgent care centres for people in Dublin, says a listener. Hi, Greg. Does anyone know what the problem is with air Wi-Fi in the convoy area? Been out since the storm, contacted air, and they said they'll fix it as soon as they can, but it could take weeks. So that's the broadband, effectively. I mean, it's the Wi-Fi in the house, but I presume... Or sorry, just to be clear, are you on about mobile broadband in the convoy area or your house broadband? Let us know. We'll make contact with AIR as well, see if we can get a more formal answer for you. Hi, my son also seen the light in the sky around 3-ish, just over the A7 in Letterkenny, Arena 7. I showed him the video of fireballs and the Starlink, but he said... what he seen was different. He was so worked up and said it looked like it was going to land, as he described, close to Tower Court area. Okay, so that and this person showed fireballs and Starlink. Wasn't that? Please tell Greg that I saw the silver-like object pass through the sky on Monday, also from Enniskillen. It was going quite fast, just appeared and disappeared within seconds, and I thought it might have been a meteorite passing through the atmosphere, but maybe it was a satellite. Brendan Gallagher in Enniskillen. Brendan, great to have you listening in Enniskillen, by the way. Thanks for choosing Highland. I'd love to know why, if you want to message us back. Not that there should be a why, but I do really appreciate it. I don't know what... Could it be a UFO? Let's just go crazy and say it was a UFO. Have you seen the UFO? Was there aliens in it? Gregory, home insurance. My renewal came in at €417. Called them up and they said the best they could do was €390. And that's me being a returning customer. Decided to price around via a broker and got the same company for €320 as a new customer. Where's the customer loyalty? Well, please. They're not loyal to us. We shouldn't be loyal to them. That applies to mobile phones, broadbands... house insurance, car insurance. I've saved a fortune over the last number of years shopping around. VHI are putting up the prices due to consultants putting up their prices. I asked how much an injection that I was getting was. It was twice the price when I claimed it through the VHI. The consultant told me off the record that prices are higher for patients with insurance. Okay. Receipts for work. Don can't even be uploaded onto the council's website. They won't accept emails. This means money isn't being paid out for work done. That's on the MICA scheme. Council down filling potholes, throwing it into water and rolling it with the wheel of a lorry. A waste of time and money especially. No drains or tables opened. All it's going to do is sticking to cars passing over it. I'm not a expert. Doesn't seem ideal there. And just lastly, before we take the bingo numbers, congratulations to Stevie Toy at Logo Picks. He won the Irish Wedding Photographer of the Year last night in the Crown Plaza in Dublin. That's 2 years in a row. Well done to you, Stevie. The HSC has urged parents to vaccinate their children against measles after an increase in cases across Britain and Europe. Measles is a potentially serious and highly infectious disease that spreads easily through respiratory droplets. Dr. Anthony Breslin is a consultant in public health medicine and is with us on the programme now. Good morning, Anthony. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning, Greg. Thank you.
Talk to us a little bit about measles, you know, what it is, who it affects, what can happen if someone catches it.
Okay. Well, measles has the unfortunate reputation of being one of the most easily transmittable infections. So it's very, very easy to transmit. For instance, if a child with measles goes into a GP surgery and is there for more than 20 minutes, we have to conclude that anybody else in that surgery waiting room is exposed. We have to take action to follow them up. So that's how infectious it is. Thankfully, we don't have many cases, but some of the older listeners might remember when it was a more severe disease. Most people got it. For most people, it was an annoying infection. They were off school for a day or two. They got an extra comic or a bit of ice cream. But what we forget, because we're not seeing the numbers, thankfully, is that it can be a very serious infection. It can lead to pneumonias. It can lead to neurological problems, deafness, vision problems. It can lead to children being admitted to hospital and going to ICU. And unfortunately, it can lead to deaths. And back in 2002, there was an outbreak in the eastern part of the country on Dublin. And at that stage, there were a number of children hospitalised and there were three deaths, unfortunately. So the historical memory is gone there. Grandmothers might remember it, but parents and young people may not remember it, but it can be a serious infection and it's very, very transmissible. And that's why we want to stop it happening.
Is it easy to identify why we are seeing such an increase in cases, particularly across Europe and Britain?
Because vaccination has dropped Europe-wide. 10 years ago, we in the Northwest would have had almost 95% uptake of the vaccine, and you need that. We're now down to 80% uptake of the vaccine. And that's mirrored in other parts of the country, and it's also in the same in Europe and the UK. And because it's so transmissible, once it gets into community, it does get around. And the reason we need such high uptake is that we need to protect people directly. If they get the vaccine, they shouldn't get the infection. Then there's a small group of people who can't get vaccines for medical reasons, whatever. And then there's another small group who they get the vaccine, but the vaccine doesn't take. Mm-hmm. So what we want to do is get as many people vaccinated so that the virus might come in, but it can't transmit, it can't go anywhere.
And this is not necessarily something brand new. I mean, you know, we could, and we have in the past, and I don't want to sound like a scratch record, but, you know, there's a lot of talk about vaccines post-COVID. But if you look at historically where there have been spikes in cases, it does tend to follow a viral conversation about vaccines, you know what I mean? So when those...
It does. I mean, if you, I suppose the thing what you might be alluding to there is the Wakefield situation in the early 2000s, when there was a spurious attempt to link the MMR to autism based on a study with 8 children, which is a phenomenally poor study, and the Lancet, which printed it, retracted it. Other people who were involved in the study retracted it. And Dr. Wakefield was struck off the medical register in the UK because it was fraudulent research. Not just bad research, it was fraudulent.
But a spike in measles followed that controversy. Enough people
Yeah, it did. It did indeed. And it struck. And if you look at the autism issue, if it was linked to autism, why are autism cases increasing relatively small, but they are increasing, but yes, measles vaccination was stable or decreasing. So there is not a link there at all. But we're concerned because at the moment now we have cases in France, cases in Austria, cases in the UK, and people travel a lot more. We have the midterm coming up. We'll have people going to Europe on holidays and skiing trips and everything else. And we'll have people coming to Ireland, to the Northwest. And we don't want them getting measles. We don't want them getting sick. Whatever about a mild case, we don't want that happening, but we don't want people getting very sick and ending up with severe consequences.
Okay, so when normally is the MMR vaccine offered?
It's given in two doses. First dose is around 12, 13 months, and the second dose then is given just preschool. One dose is good, two doses is better. Yeah. We wait until 12 months because younger children have some maternal antibodies, and that stops a good immune response. Ironically, they have some minor protection from the maternal antibodies they get during pregnancy, but they don't give a good immune response. So, for instance, when we have an outbreak, we might give the vaccine to children from 6 months up, but once the outbreak is over, we forget about that dose, and they have to get another dose at 12 months.
So two other questions then. How would a parent or guardian, because I've been through this before and it can be quite complicated if you miss the booklet or something like that there, how can you determine, and believe it or not, people do forget a few years later, how can you determine the child has had one or two or no? You probably would remember if they had no, but they could have been off sick for the second one and didn't get a catch-up.
Things happen.
Determine... And the second part of that question is if it's the case that they didn't get either or, how do you go about actually then getting it?
Okay, first of all, you might have an immunisation record, and you've no doubt put that in a safe place. You've forgotten where it is, but if you can get it, it's in that. If even you can't get that, you can contact your GP, and your GP will have records there. And if you do need it, your GP will get the vaccine for you, and it's one injection. And don't forget, it protects against measles, mumps, and rubella. And the rubella is very important for women for down the line if they're going to have children.
Okay, so check with your GP if you don't have that information.
Yes.
Okay. Listen, thank you very much for that, Anthony. Go ahead. Did you want to say one thing else?
No. Thank you for the opportunity.
No problem.
And I'm not trying to scaremonger, but just with the holidays coming up, etc., we just don't want people to have problems.
Okay, thank you very much indeed. Symptoms include high fever, cough, runny nose, characteristic red rash. Any symptoms like that? Or you've been in contact with someone with measles, you're advised to stay at home and contact your doctor by phone for advice, such as its transmissibility. You heard Dr. Anthony Bresson there. I'm not telling you what to do. I give you the information from the people that... of training in this area, and then you decide. The parish of Ernie and Castlefin are holding a St. Bridget's night and making of crosses. It's in Donnyloop Community Centre from 7 p.m. tonight. A fun-filled night in store, keeping our tradition going. Everyone welcome. Okay, good, if you get along to that. Can you please play a request for Mary McAuliffe from Dunfanaghy, who is 103 years old today, from all her friends in Falkara. Happy birthday to you, Mary. Hope you're spoilt rotten, and I'm sure you are. A comment in relation to getting house insurance and the risk of flooding. But it's not the risk of flooding, it's actually being close to a water source. The air code will be verified on GeoMap for flood zones for all of Ireland by the insurance underwriting team. Ask for the insurance company to clarify if they're applying a non-standard loading. Ask the insurance company to clarify such a jump in rate. Discounts that applied last year may not apply now, as in the customer moved car to another company, etc. Insurers give discounts if members of the credit union, some employer schemes, motor policy also same with insurance being claim free. Cheers. Thanks for a listener there. Yep, there's a lot of variables there. Well pointed. People pay VHI. The government own VHI. I'm not sure the government own VHI. I'm just going to have to check into that. VHI, can Greg do a piece on this? And if electricity bills less than 150, no government subsidy. So a single person out working, an older person, etc., no relief. Who decided that? Right, I don't know. 086 60 25,000 is the WhatsApp and text number. 086 60 25,000, or give us a call on 074 91 25,000. So the British government is set to publish details of its deals with the DUP to restore Stormont power sharing. It's expected to include legislation which could be fast-tracked through Parliament on Thursday. Tomorrow, the move follows the DUP's endorsement of the agreement on Monday, subject to laws proposed in the deal being passed. DUP leader Geoffrey Donaldson said the plans provide a basis for Stormont to return. But obviously there's a lot of... waiting to see that devil in the detail phrase being used in relation to that. Senator Niall Blaney is a spokesperson on Northern Ireland and member of the Good Friday Agreement Committee. Good morning to you, Senator. This is, of course, on the face of it, very good news. Is it news that you were expecting?
You couldn't really say you were expecting it, Greg. You were expecting more no's, if I'm being honest about it. I didn't expect it. I think we got to a stage where we weren't expecting the DUP to take the final jump, given they haven't taken it so close a number of times recently. But I think in the protests changed the attitude of people in Northern Ireland. If something about her could be mad to me there, Greg.
Okay. Hopefully it's not too big a distraction.
No, it's okay. It's grand.
Is it all right? Okay. I'll tell you what the problem is.
The people really made up their minds. People were just fed up. There were actually some unionists threatening to vote for Sinn Féin. Moreover, people are fed up with the fact that Stormont hasn't been in place.
What do you think? I mean, obviously, in the first instance, and that echo should have been relieved now at this stage. On the first instance, this is good news, getting power sharing back up and running and all of that. And of course, then releasing money that the British government had committed, which triggered, which would help obviously offset any future strikes by public workers and what have you. But it does mean there's wider work now for that will benefit not only Northern Ireland, but us here in the Northwest region going forward, that hopefully progress can be made on now.
No, absolutely, Greg. I suppose the TNT is at the perfect point, and the case study is about to go to government now. And that's important, because once the cabinet decides on that case study, we're no longer sitting waiting for the next stage to happen and approval. Once they approve the project, they realise the funding deficit required to finish that project. And that's timely, because the N285, that has to be the priority now as well, to move that project forward. And all of us are starting to come together and knit together just at the right time. And it's particularly good news for us in the Northwest, but moreover for the people in Northern Ireland. And we have to ensure that what happened over the last 8 years, where five of those years there was no assembly, we have to ensure that the likes of the DUP and Sinn Féin can't do that again. We can't just throw all the toys out of the pram when things don't go our way. There needs to be a better way, and democracy has to work better for the people of Northern Ireland and the border counties, and particularly us in Donegal, because we are so aligned with the northern border, and it's really important for us that democracy does work and we do get to move on and make things happen.
Do you believe the internal issues in the DUP could scupper anything here? Because Geoffrey Donaldson initially, I think he said this effectively gets rid of the C border, which has been such an issue. The language has changed a little bit today because the New Deal means no checks on most goods crossing from Great Britain to Northern Ireland. Most goods staying in Northern Ireland will not need checks or customs declarations. That most word is becoming interesting now, and there are a lot of people that want to take him out, take him down politically. Will this process, do you think, survive? Will he survive the process, and will this process survive unionism, the power struggle within it, do you think?
Well, I think the power struggle isn't within unionism. It's within the DUP itself.
Okay, fair enough, yeah.
But what's important here is that the DUP party, when it met the executive, they have made the positive contribution here. They have decided as an executive, while maybe not everybody's on board, they have decided that they're going ahead back into Stormont, into Parliament. And with that, they're also approving the setting up of the institutions, North-South institutions, and the North-South Ministerial Council. And that's a really, really important statement. And what happens from here, I suppose we're second-guessing, Greg. I think we need to run what we have. We need to make sure that the Parliament is up and running as soon as possible in the next few days. And I think when that happens and the economy starts to get a bounce back, and those that are actually crying out for wage increases get it, I think the people will respond to that. And I think some of the negativity that has been around it in relation to the DUP and what to do next, I think it'll wait and things will move on in a positive light.
Mary Lou McDonald, I can't find the exact quotes now at this point, has sort of said that, you know, these developments make it inevitable that there'll be an end to partition. I'm paraphrasing. Touching distance of a united Ireland, she says, as she's pictured with Mary Lou McDonald and Michelle O'Neill, this after the deal was announced to get Stormont back up and running. What do you think? Do you have any concern with the timing of those comments, as you know, power sharing hasn't been actually restored yet, and as I say, you know, that's the commentary?
Well, number one, it's not helpful, but it's funny the rhetoric in relation to United Ireland from Sinn Féin, because if you go back to the last Stormont election, for the whole campaign, United Ireland wasn't mentioned once, and you'll see in any election, north or south, Sinn Féin won't touch United Ireland. There's no word of it whatsoever. And this is just a bit of rhetoric to play to our own supporters. Sinn Féin are as real about a United Ireland as Putin is about pulling out of Ukraine. You know, the only people that can make that happen is people on both sides of the border driving forward in a way that there's a peaceful settlement. Sinn Féin can't create a peaceful settlement, and the more they talk it up, they're actually pushing it further away. And they know that too, and they play to the bandwagon that suits them. But more importantly, like, they have a strong mandate, very strong mandate, and they've rightly taken up their position. Michelle O'Neill taking up her position as First Minister, and we wish them well, genuinely wishing them well, because we need good, strong governance now. We need a proper democracy that works. And we need people in the north of Ireland as public representatives leading from the point of view of building relationships with their colleagues across the floor and those in government with them to ensure that we have a lasting democracy. Decisions have been made. And issues like the likes of Loch Ney.
Just talk about helpful comments. And I asked you the question. I'm completely unaware of your answer. But as a spokesperson on Northern Ireland, on behalf of your party and a member of the Good Friday Agreement Committee, do you think the language that you used in relation to Sinn Féin, making comparisons between Putin and Sinn Féin, do you think that's helpful, that maybe everyone needs to sort of choose the words a little bit more carefully?
Well, I wasn't making comparisons between Putin and Sinn Féin. Mm-hmm. I just said the likelihood of him pulling out of Ukraine, well, that was right, next to none. That's not making a comparison, Greg.
Okay. But overall, you're optimistic going forward, and
absolutely optimistic going forward. This is absolutely good news for Northern Ireland and the Northwest. We need that optimism, and I suppose I think probably need to tone down the political end for a while, and it's about being real, making key decisions for people. Issues like the Loch Ney that is plagued with disease, etc. A loch that provides about 40% of Northern Ireland's drinking water. Mm-hmm. These are the type of issues that affect people's everyday lives that need to be tackled now, head on and sorted out.
Thank you very much for your time. That is Senator Niall Blaney there, spokesperson on Northern Ireland for his party and member of the Good Friday Agreement Committee. Now, all this week, Highland Radio is working in conjunction with the HSE, delighted to be part of this Dementia Understands Together campaign. There are six simple actions we can all take to support someone with dementia. These include see the person, not the dementia, talk about it, stay in touch, make sure your service or space is easy to use for people, all different types of people, support the person to keep up hobbies and interests, really quite important, as is ask how you can help them. If you want more information, you can go on to you can go on to understandtogether.ie, or you can call 1-800-341-341. Here's a little bit more information for you.
A person living with dementia. Do you focus on the word living with, or just dementia? It is possible for people living with dementia to live a fulfilling life, and having the support of a community can really help. A community that sees the person, not the dementia. A community that talks about and acknowledges the condition. A community that supports and engages with families and carers. There are six key actions we can all take to ensure that people with dementia and their families are respected, supported, and connected. See the person, not the dementia. Talk about dementia. Ask how you can help. Stay in touch. Support people to keep up hobbies and interests. Make sure your service or space is easy to use. For more information, visit understandtogether.ie or call the national helpline provided by the Alzheimer's Society of Ireland on free phone 1800 341 341 from the HSE.
Now, I'd never doubt our listeners, and the listener earlier on who pointed out that the VHI is in fact a state-owned statutory corporation. That is indeed correct. The Voluntary Health Insurance Board, which trades as VHI Healthcare, is the largest health insurance company in Ireland, and it is a state-owned enterprise, a government entity which is established or nationalised by a national or provincial government by an executive order or an act of legislation. This in order to earn profit for government. Control monopoly of the private sector entities provide products. That's some of the phraseology you can associate with state-owned enterprise. And the members are appointed by the Minister for Health, and it's regulated by the Health Insurance Authority. So just to clarify that the listener spoke earlier on, 100% correct, and as I say, I never doubt our listeners. Donna joins me on the programme now. Donna, how are you keeping?
Hi, Greg. How's it going?
I'm doing okay. Now, you are talking about the lights at the Ballyrain Road. This is the set of lights just up from, I suppose, as you head towards Remelton, just up from the Mount Errigal Hotel or Screwfix. They've been out for quite some time now.
That's right. They've been out now about a week.
Yeah, this is a particular concern for you and moving about your area, Donna, because you are legally blind.
Yes, I'm legally blind, so it's very challenging to get access now to go into town. I'm coming in by Arena 7, and usually you'd be able to walk with ease from Arena 7, say, like, to go up to Tesco's because the traffic lights is there. But now, well, I can't anyway. You know, it's very challenging. And even if you're standing there and say, like, a driver was gesturing to me to go ahead, I wouldn't actually see them.
And if this is just obviously not just for going into town, but also in terms of getting your son from school as well.
Yeah, my son's at Ballyrain School there. So, yeah, I wouldn't feel comfortable going over to collect him now, like, you know, because without the traffic lights, it's very dangerous. Like,
And what was your most recent experience with the lights being off?
Well, like, I walk usually about four times a week with my friend at nighttime, and she's fully sighted. And, like, last night we were out walking. We just go walk around the town, like, and like, last night we're just standing at the traffic lights for ages. No one's stopping. And then eventually, like, a driver did stop, but he was driving a lorry. And because he was in the inside lane and the vehicle's so large, it was very challenging to see the outside lane for my friend to even see, like, and the car just went flying past. It's very dangerous, like.
Yeah, I mean, regardless of whether one can see or not, this is dangerous. Mm-hmm. But it's particularly challenging for you because your independence is removed from you as well. I mean, you know,
absolutely.
You don't want to be reliant on other people,
on other people
do
people
you?
To be with me. Yeah. Exactly. I don't want to be in that position, though.
Right, okay. We are going to find out what's going on. I noticed they were out, but it's like everything in life, Donna. Mm-hmm. It didn't inconvenience me, so Exactly, and I'm just being completely honest here. I was just like, well, maybe they've switched them off for traffic flow or something. And I really appreciate you highlighting the fact that it's not simply like that, because these things affect people in different ways, and it's had really quite an impact on your independence and collecting your child and out for your walks and stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
And the question is why, whatever's wrong with them, why is it taking so long for the problem to be addressed?
Why is it taking so long to fix it? Like, yeah, exactly.
Okay. All right, Donna, well, we're going to find out what's going on. Unless there's anything
That's
else
great.
You want
I
to mention,
you
or are you happy enough there?
No, I'm happy enough. Thank you very much
mentioning
it.
We're going to find out what's going on there. Take care of yourself. 086 60 25,000. Yeah, so those traffic lights would be... I'm not great in roads, and sometimes the road names, so I presume sometimes others are the same. So if you're approaching, if you come off the Polestar roundabout and you're going out towards Remelton, you know, the Mount Errigal's on your left, and then you come up to the roundabout, and those traffic lights aren't functioning. Donna has lost her independence, really, in terms of going to collect her son from school. Even with a person who's sighted, there was a complication in crossing the road because there was a lorry on the inside lane blocking the outside lane visually. And also, what's taken so long to fix them? Right, we're going to get on that right away, and let's see how quickly we can get that sorted. Hi, Greg. I'm certainly not telling people who to vote for in the upcoming election, but how can any of your listeners vote for any of the two larger government parties, considering their complete failure regarding defective homes, changing the terms of reference and conditions and the goalposts, obfuscation, and generally being the bad stakeholder in all of this? And don't forget the near 100 years of infrastructural starvation we've suffered at their hands. That's one person's take of it. In relation to this mysterious object in the sky, I also saw that in the sky on Monday around 2:50 at the same time in the Carrigart area. Had it been dark, I would have said it was a shooting star. It was very fast and didn't last. That comes in from Anne-Marie. Now, it could be a shooting star that is so bright. The way we perceive the sky as being light and blue or whatever is not necessarily precisely how a scientist might view it. So maybe it was just a very, very bright shooting star. It was like three times the size of the brightest streetlight, though, says a listener, which is big. What was it? Do we want it to be a UFO? Could it get any worse? I don't know. Why are people on the show calling it mica? It's not mica. It's the scam. These concrete products are defective, but so many more minerals and other things that nobody's talking about. We do all the time. But listen, we are just humans, okay? And the ladies corrected themselves to say, not corrected themselves, but clarified it. It's called mica. It's like people call, and the language is changing, and I generally don't use the word mica, but it's like lots of people call every single vacuum cleaner a Hoover. Do you know what I mean? It's just, it's like that. It's not in any way to diminish the problem. And I think the two ladies in front of me here, given the problems that they are going through, the fact that they just sort of said mica, in other words, that's what people know it as, they get a pass from me in any case. I understand what you're saying. I don't use the word mica. I use defective concrete and other phraseology. The science has moved on since it was called mica, but for many people, it is their mica home. And it's what they're going through, and I would not be one to correct them. Where are the shops with vending machines to return cans and plastic bottles in Donegal? What percentage will be recycled and what percentage will go to the incinerator? Good question. Or what percent will go on a boat somewhere? I don't know. I want to do a dig into the whole recycling thing and on what happens to our blue bins a little bit more, because I think we're being sold a pop to some extent in the impact that we're having. We are doing our bit, but what happens afterwards? And this is not as it relates to the refuse collectors. I'm not on about them. It's really what happens down the line and how, you know, even if there's someone working for a refuge company that can give us an insight into what is done with this rubbish and how it's dealt with. I've seen these vending machines in smaller shops and I've seen them in bigger shops. I don't know what the reaction to them is. What do shop owners, they have to invest an awful lot of money. Are you a small shop owner? I read somewhere that shops that don't have the machine have to advertise the nearest machine, so you could get a small company that has to advertise a big company nearby to recycle this stuff. I don't know. I don't know what we're going to do. The bottle can't be squashed. The can can't be squashed. It has to be perfect. You have to stand in it. Like the one other shop that I saw in, it's like in the middle of the shop. What, do you go in with a... do you go with a plastic bag and stand there like that there, going into the machine? I don't know. It varies from shop to shop. It's a suck it and see, we'll see. But don't go near it with bottles or cans from Northern Ireland, by the way. I got confirmed for mica 3 months ago, as this person who's affected described it. It cost $5,300. I can't apply to the scheme as I've no cracks or visible damage in the house. Interesting. I wonder why you checked for defective concrete. Is it a suspicion that you had, or you just wanted to know for peace of mind? That's interesting. I wonder if you tested every house built from, say, 2000. Would every house have an element of mica in it? And I think then it's how bad it is determines your ability to get on the scheme. I'm not really quite sure. Greg, if this new agreement is acceptable to the DUP, should that not mean it's acceptable to the rest of the party? Shouldn't the other parties boycott Stormont now? No, I think all parties agreed that the post-Brexit deal needed some adjustment. But a lot of the other parties were saying, well, let's get Stormont back up and running and we can look at that. I think there was some agreement. So I don't think that that's would necessarily be the situation there. Niall Blaney, I wonder, are you a Sinn Féin supporter or a DUP supporter? It's awful that he compared Northern Ireland to the war in Ukraine. I don't like his language. What does Senator Blaney's Fianna Fáil think of their party running candidates in the north of Ireland that they talk about so often, but that never happened? Why?